Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Well, in his 15 terms as representative of Massachusetts' 4th District, Congressman Barney Frank has often held the national spotlight on affordable housing, gay rights, and recently even health care. But after the American banking meltdown, the Newton Democrat and chair of the Financial Services Committee was everywhere, even as a subject on the Colbert Report.
Listen, I want to take what's left of my money out of the stock market.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Why not?
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me.
Yes, me and Congressman Barney Frank are very upset with this computer-driven crisis. We're just trying to stabilize the market.
Well, the markets haven't fully stabilized yet, nor are they completely reformed. But under the glare of Hal's unblinking red eye and the unblinking public eye, Barney Frank pushed financial reform legislation through the House. A companion bill passed the Senate, and now Congressman Frank must blend the two in committee to produce final legislation, which Frank says could be on President Obama's desk by the 4th of July. All the while, Congressman Barney Frank has been in a different fight that's on the horizon for him, and that being re-election. Well, we're talking about financial reform, this fall's election in the 4th District, and the possible repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the United States military with Congressman Barney Frank today. What questions do you have for the head of the House Financial Services Committee? And what are you hoping to see this election season? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us or comment on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Well, joining me now in the studio is Congressman Barney Frank. Welcome to Radio Boston, Congressman.
Thank you.
Well, let me start off right with kind of at the heart of the matter that everyone probably is spending most of their attention on. That is this financial reform package. You're head of the Financial Services Committee on the House side, so you were largely responsible of bringing the legislation to where it is today. But recently you surprised some people when you said that you wanted to strip part of those regulations out of the Senate side of the bill, and that's the part that would spin off derivative trading from banks and force them to be separate units. So you say that goes too far, and I'm wondering why.
Well, actually, the author of that provision herself, Senator Aiken, said that the interpretation I had and others, she said that's not what she meant to do. We believe that banks should be able to engage in derivative trading on behalf of their customers, and they should be able to do derivatives for their own risk. Derivatives are not a terrible thing. They can be misused. What derivatives do is this. You are in the business of producing a good or a service. You want to focus on that price, your costs, your view of demand. You don't want factors that are beyond your control to have an influence over that. So you hedge them. If you're an airline, you get a hedge against wild gyrations in the price of fuel. So you give up the chance of making a great windfall profit. You give up the chance of the bottom falling out. Financial institutions should be able to do that, too. They make loans to people, and they want the loans to be based on possibility of likelihood of repayment, et cetera. There are certain other phenomena we don't want taken into account, so they should be allowed to hedge. One of the interpretations of Senator Lincoln's bill was that it wouldn't allow banks to do that. She now says that's not what she intended. The other point we'd make is this. Paul Volcker, the former head of the Federal Reserve, mm-hmm. has said, and I agree with him, that we don't want banks doing anything on their own. We want banks only doing things for their customers. Well, I agree with that. But then the question is, if the customers want the banks that are managing their money to engage in derivative trades for them, why shouldn't they be able to? And that's the issue between myself and one reading of Senator Aiken's bill. Again, she said, well, that's not what she intended, so we may be able to work this out.
When did she say that specifically? Because I read just from last week, Ms. Lincoln was quoted in various media as saying that using swaps, one form of these derivatives, to manage risk and using depositors' money for casino-style swap dealing are two very different things. The Senate bill moves this risky activity out of the bank and into fully regulated entities protecting depositors and American taxpayers.
Well, we're going to have them into fully regulated entities. That I don't understand. Banks are, in fact, the most fully regulated entities around. So, in fact, if you move an activity out of a bank and into Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, which has now gone under, that's what we're talking about. Those are less regulated than banks. And if the customer wants the bank to do that, I don't understand why that's a bad thing. What she had, I had thought she had said that she did not want the banks not to be able to do that. You just read two, it seems to be, descriptions of different things. The other issue was this. Look, derivatives have been abused by people like AIG, but they have a legitimate use. Airlines use them all the time. Mm-hmm. Again, you're an airline, and you're trying to figure out how much to charge, and you're guessing what the passenger load's going to be. You want to guard against a wild variation in the fuel price. Or you're a farmer. The original users of these things were farmers because they wanted to be able to grow, knowing what the demand was, what their prices were. They wanted to guard against wild variations in the price. So, yeah, derivatives have been abused, but they're not inherently a bad thing.
Okay. Just so that you know, I was quoting Senator Blanche Lincoln from a Wall Street Journal article from the end of May. But you actually earlier said you said something very interesting as well, that derivatives in and of themselves aren't necessarily a bad thing, and that if they were moved away from banks, they would be moved into these investment banks, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, that kind of thing, which aren't so closely regulated. But my understanding of
I was simply responding to your point. You said...
Yeah.
You said, talking about regulated, what I'm saying is that banks are very heavily regulated.
Indeed. And so that's why, actually, I was curious about what you said, because from my understanding, roughly 97% of derivatives trading right now happens in those five big investment banks. And if we look back to the 2007-2008 timeframe when Lehman Brothers and AIG, for example, were threatening to go under, if I might just finish here, I'm not actually disputing what you're saying. I'm just wondering if you could...
AIG is not an investment bank. You understand?
Well, the reason why one of the reasons why Lehman Brothers failed is because people, you know this,
yes.
is that people were
and they're
were
not affected. But that's precisely my point. That
well, people were worried that the other financial institutions had too much exposure to Lehman
but
Brothers.
But you're missing my point, which is Lehman Brothers is not a bank. The Lincoln Amendment wouldn't have affected Lehman Brothers. Secondly, there's a more fundamental point. We're not talking about leaving derivative trading the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
AIG had no idea how much it was obligated in the form of derivatives they sold, credit default swaps. When the Federal Reserve came to us in 2008 to say not that they wanted Congress to approve it, but that under authority the Federal Reserve had since the 30s, and this is in the Bush administration, the Federal Reserve was going to pay $80 billion of AIG's debts. They simply told us that. A week later, they said, oh, by the way, it's $120 billion. Then a week later, it was $150 billion. AIG had no idea how much it had. We are not going to allow that to continue. So that you're frankly jumping into to a later point. The fundamental issue was that no matter where derivatives are traded, they need to be much better regulated. So under the bill we have, every derivative trade will have to be reported. The price will be made clear, which would be helpful for those businesses that use them to bring the price down. If they are being done by major financial houses, whether they are banks or investment banks, they would, between themselves, have to put it into a clearinghouse. And then it would go, in many cases, onto an exchange. So we are not talking about the old way of mm-hmm. derivatives. The question is, once you have strictly regulated derivatives, as I believe we should, and I want the bill to be even tougher than the House bill. I lost a couple of votes in the House on that. And once you have said banks cannot do this on their own, but only for customers, I'm not sure why people think you have to go further. That is, we will be regulating every derivative trade. You won't be able to have what AIG had. And you will be saying banks cannot put their own money at risk. They can only work for customers. That's what I think. And that's what, by the way, Paul Volcker, who's been very, very much an advocate of this, is also the one who said, and Sheila Bair, who's a very tough regulator of the FDIC, they have the first ones to raise the questions about the extent to which the Lincoln Amendment goes beyond that.
So just not to beat a dead horse here, but one last thing on this derivatives note is that so you believe that in the direction that you want to take the bills and produce a final financial reform package, that derivatives will be sufficiently regulated in order to take care of a problem that a lot of people pointed to, that it wasn't that financial institutions were too big to fail, but they were too interconnected to fail.
No question. That's what Hank Paul said. And they were too leveraged. That's exactly right. What the too big to fail was shorthand for too interconnected. What that means is they fail and they bring a lot of people down with them. So what you want to do is sever those connections. We are going to make them fail. The bill that we have allows them to fail, requires them to fail. It then says there may be a need to wind down what they've done so they don't have a negative effect on other people. But more importantly, what we will do is not allow people to get overextended, because there's a third piece to what we're talking about, and that is to prevent these institutions from being too leveraged, by which we mean you don't allow them to get so indebted that they can't pay off what they owe. AIG had no sufficient regulator. From now on, if our bill becomes law, as I am sure it will be, there will be no financial institution that will be allowed to become so indebted that it is in danger of not being able to pay off. It will be monitored. And at the point where their debts appear to exceed their capacity to pay off, they will be ordered by the regulators to stop taking on new debt and build up their capital.
Well, you're hearing the House Financial Services Committee Chairman Barney Frank explaining upcoming reforms in the financial world that he hopes to have on President Obama's desk by the 4th of July. We have to take a quick break, but there's much more with Congressman Barney Frank when we come back. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're spending some time with Congressman Barney Frank. He's the chairman of the Financial Services Committee on the House side and also representative of Massachusetts' 4th District. Let's go straight to a call. Bill's calling from Newton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Bill.
Hi, Meghna. Hi, Representative Frank.
Hello.
Thank you for your call. I have a question as it relates to foreclosures and the unwillingness to certain banks, interesting enough, banks who received some federal bailout money in working with them to avoid foreclosure, work with modification. It seems that there's no recourse for the consumer, and I think that the government, perhaps under your jurisdiction, your branch, the department that you represent, or the committee you represent, should offer some mediation for the potential foreclosee and the banks themselves.
Bill, thanks for your call. Go ahead, Congressman.
We've tried to do that. Here's the problem, and I agree that not enough has been done. One of the things I'm hoping to get in the bill that we hope to pass soon and expect to pass soon is more money. We have a new class of people, a relatively new, who've been getting foreclosed. Some people, frankly, made bad judgments, and they took loans they shouldn't have taken. Now, the banks, not the banks, basically, because it wasn't the banks that did this as much as the non-bank lending companies, should have shown more restraint, too. But we have people who took out perfectly reasonable mortgages, but they've been unemployed for longer than they had a right to expect or had to expect. And it's hard to pay unemployment out of it's hard to pay mortgages out of unemployment. So we're pushing for some money to be lent to these people, not given, so that they can have their mortgage payments made until they get their jobs back. And that's something direct. As to the banks, former Secretary of Treasury Henry Paulson, whom I admired and worked closely with, acknowledged in his book that there was one area where he and I had an angry disagreement. He refused to use the TARP leverage to get foreclosures
assistance
mitigated.
Yeah.
And he and I had a big argument, but they were in power and we weren't. It's gotten better since then. Here's the one problem we have. These are legal contracts. We can't undo them. Now, I was in favor of legislation that would have allowed people to declare bankruptcy as a negotiating tool to some extent, Frankie, with the banks. Ironically, under the law today, if you own two houses, you can go bankrupt and get out of paying the mortgage on your vacation home in the Berkshires or the Cape, but you can't on your primary residence, which is what ought to be. So we didn't have the legal tools to do that, but we have been pushing the banks to do that. I've had hearings. I remain unsatisfied. I can't say that more has been done because of our leverage. And the last point I would make is this. Going forward, this won't happen again. In the bill that we are going to pass, we are going to have strict rules against those kind of mortgages and better protections for everybody concerned if they're made.
Let's get another call in here. Caroline's calling from Framingham. Welcome to Radio Boston, Caroline.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call. My question for the senator is this. How likely will he be able to address campaign finance reform in the future? I believe that taking money from anybody as a public servant is unethical and immoral. and I will take the answer on the radio. I'm going to shut my phone off. Thanks.
Thanks, Caroline.
I wish I could give you a better answer. Unfortunately, the United States Supreme Court, dominated by the conservatives, despite their argument that they're not the activists and they just read the Constitution, have overturned years and years of legislation restricting campaign spending. And they recently decided by a 5-4 vote, the conservative members of the court, that all the laws we had preventing corporations from spending directly in election campaigns were illegal. So now corporations can spend, Declaration of Independence says, endowed by their creator with inalienable rights. I didn't know God was the direct creator of corporations. I thought there was some intervention by the government. But so the answer is, I agree that the campaign financing system we have is a bad one. Efforts to put restrictions in place have consistently been stricken by the current Supreme Court. And what we're going to need is for a president like Barack Obama or somebody after him to get enough new appointments to the Supreme Court so we can reverse this set of decisions, because they have held that your First Amendment rights, and we're the only country in the world where this is held this way, include the right to spend money in unlimited ways in campaigns, and that, of course, makes campaign finance impossible.
Congressman Frank, let me ask you, just a few days ago we had Congressman Michael Capuano on the show, and he was talking with us about the Disclose Act, and that's legislation that he's sponsoring that would at least in part try to remedy what you've identified as the Supreme Court's decision to allow unlimited campaign spending by corporations, and that the Disclose Act would include things like CEOs having to identify that they gave money for certain advertising, et cetera. Would you support?
Oh, well, I am supporting. I'm working with Congressman Capuano. What that says is, and we want to go further and say that the corporation should have to have a vote of the shareholders. So we can put some restrictions there and make the corporations identify themselves. Yeah, the Democrats are putting that forward, but frankly, the Republicans have been against campaign finance reform. They think they do well when all this money comes out. John McCain used to be for campaign finance reform. Now that he's got a very conservative primary challenge, he's walked away from it. But I'm working with Congressman Capuano, and I'm going to help him pass that bill.
And we should note that the Supreme Court ruling also applies to unions as well, who have historically been seen as supporters of the Democratic Party. But let's get another caller in here. Cindy's calling from Newton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Cindy.
Hi, Mr. Frank.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, this is Cindy from Newton. And I am calling, the Jew, I'm calling about your comments, specifically I'm ashamed over treatment of some Palestinians, and also your reaction to the flotilla situation and your criticism of Israel.
Well, there was a misreporting in the newspaper about that. The Boston Herald said I had harsh words for the Israeli Navy. That's not true. I did not criticize the Israeli Navy. I hadn't at the time that they asked me about it, Tuesday morning, read about it. I think Israel had a right to try to keep limits on what went into Gaza. My comment about being ashamed was very specifically not about the Israeli government, but about some Israeli settlers in the West Bank who have been engaged in violent treatment of their Arab neighbors. And I did want to say that was something that I was ashamed of. But I made it very clear that I was not talking about the Israeli government. And as far as the Israeli government is concerned, I was on the Chris Matthews show last week on this issue. Look, Israel took over Gaza in self-defense. And then Prime Minister Sharon, kind of a hawk, gave up Gaza and said, okay, we're going to give this back to the Palestinians to govern. And the reward for Israel was it being taken over by a very harsh group of terrorists dedicated to Israel's destruction. And no, Israel can't be expected to allow anybody to bring anything they want in there, whether it's a Turkish pro-Hamas group or whether it's Iranians. So I had the suggestion or the statement that I said something harsh about the Israeli Navy is simply untrue. People can see the transcript, and there's nothing in there. I did, during a wide-ranging discussion, express my deep shame at some Jews in the West Bank, individual citizens, who I think are persecuted the Palestinians. I think that's outrageous, but that's not the Israeli government policy. And I'm hoping the Israeli government will crack down on those people.
Congressman Frank, let me ask you about that, because many in the international community are calling for an international review of that incident on the flotilla. Is that your take on the best way to go forward?
No, Israel has a right to be skeptical of international inquiries. Now, where's the demand for the international inquiry on the North Korean sinking of a South Korean submarine in which 46 people were killed with no provocation, no incident whatsoever? Are we subjecting American troops to an international inquiry because people get killed because we make mistakes. The Israeli government, I would advise them to have an inquiry, and I understand they're talking about it. The Israeli government has a better record of self-examination than almost any other government. There's a book out of Israeli Supreme Court decisions restraining the government of Israel and national security. Frankly, the Israeli Supreme Court has a better record than the American Supreme Court in restraining the government. So I think there are people they can appoint in Israel with a very good record of being independent. But the UN has been very biased against Israel. I regret that. There's a double standard or that applies to Israel. So, yes, I think it's in Israel's interest to have an inquiry, but I think it should be one that that they do themselves. Again, we want to stress. I think it needs to be stressed. Israel gave up control of Gaza, and Hamas drove out the Fatah, the mainstream Palestinians, up until then. And they do not believe they should be in Israel, and they've used it as a base for attack. So, of course, Israel isn't going to allow people in. I mean, if Al-Qaeda took over British Columbia, I don't think you'd see America in favor of an open border between Canada and the United States.
Well, if I could bring it back home here in the last couple minutes we have in the conversation and talk about the fact that you are running for re-election in the 4th District this year. That district actually also went for Senator Scott Brown, of course, the Republican. So do you see that as a potential shift in your base of support, or does it mean that that your re-election may be tougher this year than it was in years past?
Well, first, it did go very narrowly for Senator Brown. Our district was something like 49.8 to 49.5. It was very divided. But yeah, I think all incumbents of both parties have to work harder this year. The public is angry. I think they have a right to be angry. I think some people misunderstand the reasons for the anger. But on the other hand, I've always campaigned. I've always been out there. I've debated anybody who's ever wanted to debate with me, who was my opponent first in the primary and then later after primaries in the final, every time I've run. So I expect to be campaigning. The final thing I'd say is this. Because I'm the lead guy in the House and trying to get financial reform, and because many of the very conservative people in the country have this, I think, extreme free market view that says no reform, I've been a target. And, you know, one of the things that John Kerry learned with Swift Boat or Michael Dukakis when he campaigned, no matter how implausible the accusation, it's not self-refuting. If people are telling lies about you, and there are just plain lies told about me by a variety of people on the right wing, you got to refute them, and it costs money to do that. So I'm going to spend more money this campaign than I have in the past, largely because, frankly, there are just things said about me that are wholly untrue, and we've learned if you don't respond to lies, then people believe them.
Well, you also are very famous for saying things that are very interesting and compelling, and I was looking back at an interview that you gave to The New Yorker back in 2009, and you said at that time, quote, "We're at a moment now where liberalism is poised to have its biggest impact on America since Roosevelt because the conservative viewpoint has been so thoroughly repudiated by reality." That was back in 2009. So I'm wondering, a year and a half later, you've still got this fight over financial reform not finished yet, almost done, and a fight in which you depart from some of your Democratic colleagues on the extent of regulation. So do you think reality now maybe is putting the limits on how the liberal viewpoint can go?
You're wrong about where I am with my Democratic colleagues. Frankly, in the House, I had to fight hard to get as much as we did. And the position I'm talking about is pretty much the mainstream, including with the Obama administration on the regulation. We're going to have an independent consumer agency, which people thought we couldn't get over the objection of some of the financial institutions. We're going to restrict bad subprime mortgages. We are going to severely regulate derivatives, whether they're in banks or not. I think that's the secondary question. The question is whether you regulate them. But on the other hand, yeah, it has the economy, the depths of the recession were worse than I thought they would be at that time. That was really, actually, that interview was given late in 2008. Mm-hmm. And we had not fully understood the negative impact of the crisis that came as a result of no regulation. And so, yeah, there's an anger at government that is somewhat limiting, and it is important for us to get this financial reform done to show people that we can protect them, because until you can undo the effects of that terrible recession, people will be in that kind of mood.
Well, it's Congressman Barney Frank, representative of the 4th District of Massachusetts. Thank you so much for being with us. Up next, what's the mystery about food allergies and why is it so hard to crack that code? We'll continue the conversation in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.